At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions Podcast, part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we take a look at how this franchise has evolved from their most recent dark period under Matt Patricia and company to where we are today with Sheila, Brad, and Dan. We discuss Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford, along with other aspects of the roster, including the never-ending kicker saga, plus share our optimism for the future. This show went so long that we actually are going to break it down into two episodes. So let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is Jameer Gibbs, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions Podcast.
It is summertime, folks, so no need to adjust your calendars, but we have an opportunity for a bonus training camp wrap-up episode today, as we have a special guest on today. Joining me is Jeremy Reisman from SB Nation. Jeremy covers the Lions extensively, running Pride of Detroit since 2015, I believe. Right. Jeremy, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to join the show, and please tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Matthew. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to your fans here. I grew up a Detroit Lions fan. I was a season ticket holder as a child, going to games with my dad. Writing was never necessarily in the plans for me. Graduated with a psychology degree, but Pride of Detroit has always been about community. And so one of the cool things that Pride of Detroit offered me early on and still offers to this day is a place on the website called Fan Posts, where anyone can kind of create their own articles. And that's essentially where I got started, creating fan posts. I had created my on paper preview, which was just a cool idea of mine that I had. I still actually write that column today. It's the way I preview articles. The guy who was running the site at the time, Sean Ewell, put a heck of a lot of work into that site, in its early formative years, really built a strong reputation for the site. And when he saw my fan post, he liked what I was doing. He started to bring me aboard. And then when he stepped down in 2015, he recommended I take over for the job. And so despite no, you know, journalism necessarily degree or formal training in writing, I kind of took a very unconventional route to start running Pride of Detroit. And then we got partial credentials in 2017 because of a lot of the work that Sean did when he was running the site. And then 2018, we became a fully credentialed media for the Detroit Lions, meaning we get to go to the practice, we get to go to the games. We get a lot of opportunities to talk to players and coaches and things of that nature. So since then, it's essentially been a full-time job for me. And, we've expanded the Pride Detroit offerings to podcasts in the past. We have a YouTube page. We have a premium newsletter where we do kind of some special stuff over there. So it's been a really cool and awesome ride professionally and you know, the cool thing to me about Pride of Detroit is because it's so community based, we as the writers don't have to hide away from the fact that we still remain fans of the team. So, you know, a lot of the stuff we write has that passion of a fan, whether it's in the positive or the negative. Luckily, over the past couple of years, it's been much more positive based. But, you know, we write with a lot of heart. And I think that's something that makes Pride of Detroit pretty unique these days.
That's awesome. I love the work you and your team do over at Pride of Detroit. You guys really get into a lot of details on things. I do miss your podcast. But again, I still love the work you guys do on the website. And I mean this sincerely, anybody that's listening, check it out. They've got really detailed information. You want to know more about the Lions, it's groups like Pride of Detroit that will really educate you and make you possibly the smartest guy in the room when you're talking to all your friends.
I appreciate you saying that. And I miss the podcast too. And I've teased this on a couple other podcasts. Things are moving in a positive direction on that end. And I'm hopeful I'll have good news for you guys in the upcoming weeks, I'll just say.
Awesome. Well, fingers are crossed for you on that one. All right. Jeremy, let's get in here. Let's start by doing a little reflecting. Recent Lions history. Okay. I don't want to dwell too much on the past, but again, to fully appreciate where the Lions are now, you kind of have to unpack where we've come from.
Yeah.
You covered the team extensively under the Matt Patricia era from 2018 to 2020, but you're also there following them during the Jim Caldwell era. Yeah. And let's start with that a little bit. The Lions had 3 winning seasons in 4 years under Jim Caldwell. Were you surprised that they let him go? Now, they didn't win any playoff games during that time, and some people thought they underachieved during that time. But what was your vibe going into that, and were you surprised by it?
I can't say I was necessarily surprised at the time, because I also separate surprise from support. Cause at the time I was a little iffy on it. I understood why they made the move, but I wasn't 100% behind it. But this is a results league, right? 4 years is sometimes an eternity in a coaching career. A lot of coaches don't even get that much. And if you can't produce a playoff win, let alone a division win, let alone a home playoff game, any of that, you know, in that final season, they go 9-7, kind of blowing a really good chance at winning the division, at making the playoffs. I can understand the disappointment. I can understand the Lions seeing that, you know, they had pulled themselves out of, you know, the crappy 2000s that were. They had pulled themselves out of, you know, what was the worst franchise in football and became a meddling team, a team that is competitive. But they wanted to take that next step. And I can appreciate that. I think a lot of times, particularly in the 90s, the Lions got criticized a lot for, you know, a lot of people would say accepting mediocrity. They were a team that constantly made the playoffs, but never made any noise in the playoffs. And so I think that's probably what, you know, ownership had in mind when they let Jim Caldwell go. But at the same time, Jim Caldwell remains to be one of the most well-respected people who have ever walked through the halls of those Lions, the Lions facility. I still talk to employees that are still there today and saying, and they only have really nice things to say about Jim Caldwell. And I think a lot of the things that Dan Campbell is getting credit for in terms of his management skills, I think Jim Caldwell had all of those things as well. I think where maybe he ran into trouble were the people around him that he trusted. You know, a lot of people criticize, you know, some of the coaching staff that he had, and maybe he was a little bit too loyal to some of them to a fault. And so to that end, I think you could argue that maybe, yeah, they did underperform under Jim Caldwell. But again, not surprising at the time, because like you pointed out, there just wasn't a lot of hardware. There weren't any banners to be hung in 4 years where the Lions did have a competitive roster.
All right. I think I agree with you on your sentiments there as far as I wasn't surprised by the move, but I didn't fully support the move because we were seeing success that we hadn't seen and yeah, you know, in those, the early aughts there that had been so devastating to the fan base. But unfortunately, what that led to was a very bad situation. And now I'm not looking for any specifics to throw anybody under the bus, but that experience in the building with Quinn and Patricia, that group in charge, what was it like covering the team? What was your experience like?
Yeah, it was tense. I think that might be the best way to put it. It felt like a lot of people were walking on eggshells. It was hard for me because that was my first year credentialed, being in there every day. So I didn't have anything to compare it to. I wasn't there in the building for the Jim Caldwell era. All I have is stories and you know, firsthand telling from other people. So as far as I knew at the time, like, that's just how it worked in the NFL room. Like, and I kind of understood it, right? Like, you look at the NFL and sometimes you think maybe it takes itself a little too seriously. You know, a lot of teams are very secretive. So it wasn't that surprising to me that the coaching staff and the general manager and everyone was just kind of like, we're not going to tell the media anything, and we're going to make sure that the players don't tell you anything. Like, that seemed to be a legitimate strategy for a lot of teams. And so I just kind of thought that's how it worked. Come to find, like, it doesn't have to be that way. But yeah, it just felt like, everyone in the building was told, and I'm not saying this as facts. It's just like the sense, the vibes I got from everyone was like, they were told, don't talk to the media. Don't, like, they are the enemy. Everything has to stay in this building. Nothing leaves the building. And so that makes it a very tough work environment for me personally. And I think amongst players who want to be themselves, who want to be loose and fun, obviously that puts a little bit of additional stress on them. And so the one thing that I think I learned most from the Patricia era and then the transition into where we are with the Campbell era is the importance of culture. That is something that I had always kind of shied away from and thought like, that's a culture is what wins. That's kind of how I thought is because you've seen there, you know, the authoritarian coaches out there that win football games. They're those guys out there, and they're the guys that are the quote unquote players coaches that win football games. And so to me, I looked at that and I said, culture doesn't matter. As long as you win games, people are going to enjoy what they're doing. And while there is obviously some truth to that, I think if you want to give your team the best chance to win, you have to have some level, you have to give everyone in the building some level of autonomy where they don't have to be looking around their shoulders. They don't have to be walking on eggshells. They can be themselves to a certain degree, to a point where that's how they're going to do their job best. Like, if they're constantly worried about, you know, the shadows behind them, they're not going to be at their best performance. And I think that's the sense that I got, particularly looking back now of what that Patricia era was all about.
All right. Well, when Sheila took over, she kept Patricia around initially, but she didn't hesitate to make that change in the middle of that first year. Did you guys get much interaction with Sheila when she first took charge?
More so than we had from any of the other Fords, for sure. It's not a ton, but and you know, Pride of Detroit, I think, is still a little bit differentiated from some of the traditional media. So, like, I know some of them got one-on-ones with Sheila, which was not something that was very common. And I know, you know, I would say even the moment in 2022 where she stepped down, the Lions were 1-5 or 1-6 at the time, and said, "Hey, I'm just coming down to reiterate my belief in where we're going and the people in charge." That is something like we never saw under any of the Fords, whether it was Martha or William Clay Ford. There was kind of always a sense that while I never doubted their care for the team, like the importance of winning to any of those people, they always just kind of seemed to do it from a high perch where they were never to be seen. Like, they're there at the top of the franchise. You'll see them in the suites, but never anywhere else. And you can operate that way and be fine. And in a lot of ways, a hands-off approach works, particularly with the media. I think some owners get in trouble when they're a little bit too much in front of the media. But at the same time, if this whole regime is going to preach this idea of transparency and openness, and you know, being yourself, if Sheila wants to come down and talk to the media, she's going to do it. And so to make that message consistent, which I think is important to having it stick, like, if management is operating different than the players and that's different from the coaches, if there's a different set of standards there, the message isn't going to stick as well. So seeing Sheila being more open and transparent works in cohesiveness with everyone doing that. And I think it's very much appreciated on my personal part. I think fans very much appreciate That level of ownership, that level of being responsible for the team and not shying away when criticism is at her front door. And so, I mean, without a doubt, there's been a lot more access. I can't say I've personally benefited a ton from the access, but by proxy of other people having access, I think we all benefit.
That makes a lot of sense. And her first big move, other than getting rid of Matt Patricia, was her first hire, which was Chris Spielman, number 54. Yeah. I loved it because he was my favorite player growing up. I was a huge Spielman fan. Actually, that's the first, and I actually thought about the only football jersey I've ever purchased. I still have it, and thanks that's to awesome. The oversized stuff we wore in the 90s, it still fits me today. but I loved it because of the tenacity he brought to the team back then and the humbleness and the hard work attitude he brought. And so that was great to see that he was brought on board, someone who had been around for that success. And it's easy to see how things are going today. Now we're in 2024, but let's go back to 2021. After that hire, and then with the hiring of Brad and Dan, I mean, how evident was the difference already changing from the previous year or two for you?
I mean, probably the opening press conference, right? Like, as much as we like to poke fun at it and you know, nationally, all people seem to take from it was the kneecap stuff. Like, it was something different to me. And I think the moment where, like, I realized something special might be happening, and I'm not saying, like, I knew that from this moment on the Lions were going to be fine, but, like, the thing that always resonated with me the most was not the kneecap stuff, was actually nothing from the introductory press conference. It was a video that the Lions put out of Dan Campbell walking into the facility for the first time. He steps onto the indoor practice field for the first time since he was there as a player. And, like, he starts to break down and tear up. And to me, that showed just, like, how much he is going to put everything into this job, like how important it was to him. He knows Detroit. He knows the franchise. He knows the fans and how important it is and how big of a difference it would be if he turned this franchise around. And so, like, that level of not only devotion, but, like, also kind of having the emotional intelligence to be like, this is an emotional moment for me. I'm not going to shy away from tearing up at this. Like, that to me shows a genuine person. And whenever anyone asks me today, like, what, you know, who actually is Dan Campbell, the first word out of my mouth is always genuine. He is the most genuine person that is unapologetically himself in a way that isn't mean-spirited. I think a lot of times we throw, like, oh, you're unapologetically yourself. That just means you have unfettered access to insulting people. That's not Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell is just, he's a goofball, but, you know, he can get very intense, but he's also just, like, a very thoughtful, egoless person. And so, that just, like, that snapshot of him on the field to me projects to who he is across the board. And when I saw that, I'm like, this is a guy that I want to know a little bit better. This is a guy that I think I might like a lot on a very personal level. And it turns out that's very much the case.
Well, I think you're right. I think all fans would agree with what you said there, is he has that likability factor. And that was evident from the first moment we heard him. I had the opportunity to interview Jason Kabinda during the playoff run just before the Tampa Bay game. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I go, you know, you were there with the previous coaching staff and now with this new one, and not as new as it was, you know, 3 years ago. But I said, you know, what was your impression? What was the difference? And he said, you know, in Dan's first year, you know, before games and as they're preparing, he reminded them that you can't make stupid, simple mistakes, he goes, because we don't have the ability to overcome those. And so he talked about honesty. Dan was always honest and upfront with them and just being overall genuine and true. And he said, you know, that's what got the players to buy in. And he said, if the players won't buy in, it doesn't matter what you're trying to sell. It's not going to work. And he said that was a starting point for the change that he saw happening with the Lions.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I'm not trying to throw Matt Patricia under the bus, but I think a lot of people didn't see that genuine attitude from him. I think a lot of people thought the same thing that they say of everyone that comes from the Belichick tree. Like, he's just someone wearing a Bill Belichick suit, like trying to be that hard guy that's very standoffish. And I don't know if that's what Matt Patricia is like as a person. In fact, you know, we run into him every now and then at, like, owners meetings and stuff, and he seems like a genuinely nice guy. And so I think that's part of the problem of why it didn't work. It's just like it's this guy that's trying to be something that he's not, which is not at all a problem for Dan Campbell.
Yeah, no, exactly. You see exactly who he is, and then that's what endears people to him. And so now Sheila, Brad, and Dan, you could maybe make the argument, are not the exact same three people they were 3 years ago, because we always grow as human beings. We evolve, we change, we learn. And so have you seen any growth, adjustment, or change from those three individuals in the 3 years?
I would say of all of them, probably Brad Holmes has been the most. And I think it's a confidence thing. That guy has been operating with more confidence than you know he was kind of like a soft-spoken guy. He was a guy that wasn't ever in front of the podium in Los Angeles. Like, he barely, you know, if you were to search for any Brad Holmes quotes before 2021, you'd find maybe one article that had ever talked to him and told his story. And so, understandably so, a little soft-spoken in front of the mic, maybe didn't have a ton of confidence in what he was doing yet and in his process. He was probably still very much figuring it out, but you fast forward to 2024 and he's calling out media members and he's wearing shirts with Dan Campbell's face on it and he's calling himself a villain. And so, and I personally think you see that a little bit in the way he operates in the draft too. And, you know, I wrote this offseason that it's maybe he's getting a little bit too far into his confidence, but like, he's making bolder choices. Not that he hasn't been bold in the draft before, but he's, you know, he traded up four times in this past draft. He got a couple of he gets a developmental prospect from Canadian football and Giovanni Manu. Whereas last year, you know, he got a couple of other small school prospects like Broderick Martin, where, you know, these are very much boomer bust kind of players that, you know, maybe he wouldn't have tried to do that in 2021 or 2022. And granted, like, they have a good enough roster now where maybe you can take a little bit more of those bigger swings. You certainly wouldn't want to start a rebuild with, you know, some big guys that could certainly fizzle out. But yeah, I think just in general, like, more so than anyone, because personally speaking, I think Dan Campbell's the same guy he was on day one, but Brad Holmes is a guy that I think he's gotten a little bit more confidence and feels a little bit stronger about his process. And by all means, he's certainly earned it so far.
That he has, and especially I felt like some of the national media was excessively harsh on some of his draft picks and sure. And kind of, you know, I know this positional draft value thing was like played over and over. And yeah, there is some merit to that. There definitely is. But as I pointed out back then, play a team that's got a really good running game and it just changes everything. And so when you have a roster, like, as you said, our roster has gotten better year after year. You can take some of these luxury picks and do that.
Yeah, no question. And listen, I, as someone who was kind of right up there and saying some of the same positional value things, an easy way to shut me up is just to draft good players. And that's something he's done, right? Like, Jahmyr Gibbs has been a really, really good player. We'll see with Jack Campbell, but he seems to be trending in the right way. Sam Laporta, tight end, a lot of people don't think is that valuable of a position. And he goes out and has a record-breaking rookie season. So I'm happy to eat my words if it means that the Lions are winning football games.
I hear you on that one. And I mean, I almost feel like we've been spoiled those last few drafts. It's like, you know, I almost want to caution people, don't get used to it, because it is a very inexact science, the draft is. And so, but you know what, if it continues, that would be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely don't expect to get four starters every year like they did last year. Those days are over.
They are, especially with us if we're drafting later and we don't have extra draft picks from the previous trade. So
exactly.
Well, let's move into what kind of brought us into that, those extra draft picks. Let's talk about who I think are probably the two best quarterbacks in the last 50 years of the Detroit Lions, maybe the two best since Bobby Lane, yeah. Which is kind of crazy to say. But if you look through it, I mean, are Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford not the two best quarterbacks since that time?
I almost think it's inarguable, honestly. Like, maybe you could say some nice things about Scott Mitchell. Like, they had a really good offense for a couple years there, but I'm not sure how much was necessarily him running the ship is more so than just having the best running back in NFL history. But yeah, I certainly in the modern, you know, if you were to put any of these old quarterbacks in the modern game specifically, I think Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford would be by far better than anyone else.
All right. And so, again, if you're a Lions fan that's been around for a little while, you know, you got it pretty good right now going from Stafford to Goff. But let's start with Stafford a minute here. I was a huge fan of his. What endeared me to him was that Cleveland Browns game. I mean, that was the moment that it all changed, because again, the jury's out. I wasn't sure he was going to be the guy we wanted when we drafted him number one. Yeah. As it turns out, he was significantly better than the guy who went number one the following year, Sam Bradford, when everybody thought Bradford was going to be the pro ready quarterback. And so, but when he came back into the game, he was aware enough of the timeout. He got it done. I mean, that endeared me to him. I was sad to see Stafford go. He was here from 09 to 20. What are your thoughts on Stafford while he was here and when he left?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Stafford, up until probably maybe this past year, he had been my favorite Lions player since Barry Sanders. I still think back to his first preseason game. He threw this rope down the sidelines in between the safety and the corner in a way that I had never seen that fast of a football thrown on such a straight line and perfect stride. It almost reminds me of that throw he made in the fake spike game that led them on that last minute drive down the sideline. I can't remember the receiver's name, but just, just an absolute rope from the other hash. It was just the physical skill set of Matthew Stafford, I think, will maybe never be matched by another Lions quarterback. I think he was just that talent. I should say is that talent of a just pure passer. And some of the things he continues to do, the no look passes and things like that, are just, they're jaw dropping. They're really, and so like on a purely physical, spectrum, I do think he's probably a better quarterback than Jared Goff, but he didn't get it done in Detroit. And I think a lot of that, he does deserve a fair amount of blame. Like, he was a little bit reckless with the football, turned the ball over quite a bit. His interception numbers were certainly higher than some of the people that were considered elite during his time in Detroit. Aaron Rodgers is a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Tom Brady is a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Peyton Manning turns it over a little bit, but not as much as Matthew Stafford did. So, that contributed to some of the failures. Now, of course, you see him immediately get a Super Bowl in with the Rams. And so proof is in the pudding. Like, if the Lions had put a better team around him, they would have won a Super Bowl. Like, that is basically fact at this point. Not so much an opinion. So, I don't look negatively at his time in Detroit, and I don't think the fact that Jared Goff also quickly turned the franchise around and got this team their first playoff wins in 30 years, I don't think that is a condemnation on what Matthew Stafford accomplished in Detroit. I think, Matthew Stafford probably would have seen a lot of success if he had stayed. And at the same time, I don't blame him for leaving. I really don't. You never know what's on the other side of a regime change. The man was entering the twilight of his career. He wanted an opportunity, and by all means, it was not an easy decision, right? It's something that took him a while to think about. It was very emotional for him. And so, to me, there's no ill will on my side for him requesting a trade. And I think any ill will that maybe people had at this point has probably been eased by the fact that the Lions quickly turned things around and got two first round picks for him and all that sort of stuff. So I mostly look at the Matthew Stafford era as something that was very positive. It was something new. It brought excitement to Detroit for a dozen years. Like I said, they pulled themselves out of irrelevancy and made a couple playoff runs. But it's unfortunate that he has to, raise the Lombardi for another team.
Yeah, there's so much around the Stafford thing to dissect. And I agree. I was sad to see him go. His leaving, though, it did make sense. And I got that. I mean, entering the twilight of his career, not knowing how much time it was going to take to get things off the ground, and knowing that it would help us get better that much quicker by getting something for him. I get annoyed on the narrative that the Lions kept him down. Because I look at that with, I don't think it was 2014 playoffs when he had Calvin Johnson. We had a really good defense in Ndamukong Suh. Unfortunately, our GM put us in a bad situation with Sue, and he is able to walk. But we had a really good team that year. So it's not like Stafford's never had talent to work with. And then with the Rams, he went into a team that was loaded. And then they added Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr. midseason. So right. It was a team effort, and Stafford definitely made some plays to win games for them. But again, I think sometimes as quarterbacks do, too much blame, too much credit. I just don't want the Lions to maybe be narrated even much more harshly than they need to be in a situation like that. I love Stafford. I appreciated him. Like you said, he was a favorite player of yours since Barry Sanders.
Have you ever tried to explain football to a kid? It's near impossible to make it make sense. I know my girls didn't get it at first. Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. My daughters and I read through the book and we played each of the games. Their excitement grew as we progressed, and at the end, you could see the connection between the activities and how they correlated to understanding football. It's a well-put-together product. Folks, in addition to running Not the Same Old Lions podcast, I'm also a teacher. I know a thing or two about learning. Future Fans specifically designed their product to engage and educate kids about the game of football. My daughters aren't just fans of watching football either. They're now playing flag football too. And they're big Lions fans. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. It's only $49.99. Use the code LIONS at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories with a kid in your life starting now.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
But he was gone, and we have this whole new team building up, and we get this guy named Jared Goff. And I remember watching him play with the Rams and thinking, wow, how do these teams just get good quarterbacks? And, you know, one last thing on Stafford is whenever Stafford was in the game, you felt like you had a chance to win that game. Yeah. Unfortunately, except when, like, those few years Sean Hill was there, if Stafford wasn't in the game, you knew you were losing the game. I mean, there was just, like, no in-between. So we get Jared Goff in the trade. You know, like Stafford, Jared Goff's toughness has a thing that's endeared me to him. Probably more of a mental toughness that we have seen, what he went through as far as being cast off. I mean, I still remember watching those final weeks, months, the final year in Los Angeles and how that all went down because I was following, you know, all the teams in the league at the time and not knowing what would come next. But the way he came back and kind of came through, a lot has been made about his turnaround. Now, I'm going to be honest, when he first came here, I didn't really know what to expect. And that first year, I saw some darts. I saw a dart against the Packers. I'm like, wow, that was like on pinpoint accuracy. But then you saw some really bad decisions being made too under pressure. I don't know if it was a fourth down pass that he threw out of bounds or something.
Right.
And so now a couple things. One, the talent level when he first got here wasn't anywhere near where it is today. And we're going to get into that a little bit more. But first off, what were your expectations when Jared Goff arrived about Jared Goff?
They were pretty low, not going to lie. There are not a lot of quarterbacks that are traded away for two first round picks, with two first round picks, I should say, for another quarterback that rise from the ashes and become anything. I don't know if it's really ever happened. Like, some people throw out like Drew Brees as an example, but it's kind of a little bit different. It's not like he faded out with the Chargers. It was injury related and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, if you're looking at that move based on precedent, to get to where we are today is, I mean, just a minuscule probability, right? Like, even the most slappy Lions fans have to be kind of amazed at where we are today. And so, listen, this is a team that's hitting a full reset. They're trading away their franchise quarterback. They're getting a bunch of draft picks in return. They're drafting high. The natural inclination is that they're eventually going to draft their future quarterback, right? It's how you reboot a franchise eventually. They didn't necessarily have to do it in year one because they got Jared Goff, who had a couple more years, you know, on his contract. But Yeah, I like everything pointed to this being a bridge quarterback, and I know that that's kind of a derogatory term now, but like that's what this looked like. You know, Jared Goff had a couple really good years under a cool new offense and a innovative offensive coordinator, but it didn't, you know, it faded away. It wasn't, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a flash in the pan. It was over. And so the Lions are going to get a starting capable quarterback for a couple of years before they eventually cede way to the starter. That's how I saw it. And I expected losing for the first couple of years, and then I expected him to be gone. And it's a stark reminder of a lot of things. It's a stark reminder that let's not call a career at the age of 26, 27. It's a reminder of coaching matters in terms of player development. And it's a reminder that sometimes when a coach says, "We believe in this guy and he's not a bridge quarterback," they're not just blowing smoke. They're not just saying this to, you know, support their guys. Some guys actually believe it. And when it's the guy that was kind of paramount in drafting Jared Goff in the first place, maybe you should pay a little bit more attention to that.
Yeah, the fact that it was Brad Holmes saying that, and you know, when you kind of look, if you remember back, I think another deal on the table or offer to the Lions was like the Panthers wanted to give up a first round pick in Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
And it's just like, wow, the different directions things have could have gone. And you're right though, you know, Brad Holmes doesn't make that deal for Jared Goff if he doesn't think Jared Goff is going to be the guy to get them where they need to go. Like I said, there were things mixed back and forth, and I'll be honest, it was that first season that Goff won me over. And the moment that it won me over was after he completed that touchdown pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown, and the way he and Dan Campbell embraced it just showed me that that coach and that player were on the same team and they were bought in. And I was like, it was exciting. I mean, I can tell you exactly where I was when that happened. I yelled so loudly. I'm glad I was the only one home because I would have woken everybody else up, although it was an afternoon game. But I mean, it was amazing. And so that got me in. You know, I was surprised how we started off slowly the following year, and whatnot. That I think it was a 1-6 start. But a lot of people, even last year, early in the season when I was at a Lions game, people still wanted to run Jared Goff out of town a little bit, definitely during the 2022 season, but even last year. And so, you know, how long have you heard people doubting Goff? I mean, now we hear that chant everywhere of Jared Goff that started in the playoff game and has expanded outside of football. You know, tell me a little bit about your eventual buy-in on Goff and what you've heard from other fans that people that have responded to your articles.
I would say I'm a late adopter, I'm not gonna lie. When the Lions had that 1-6 start, there was a couple of games in there where he really struggled. I can't help but think a lot of time of that Patriots game where they got shut out. That was in 2022, and in the midst of that losing streak. And that was a really important game for a lot of Lions fans to just like mentally get over the Matt Patricia era. And so I was pretty frustrated after that game, and a lot of my, you know, ire went towards Goff because he made some mental mistakes in that game. And listen, like he's a quarterback that I just think needed a little bit of time, needed a little bit of belief, needed a better supporting cast. And so I understood all of that, but at that point in his career, I thought he had had enough. And so I'll be honest, I was amongst the crew that was ready to try something new. Not that the Lions had that on the roster at 2022. I knew he was going to finish the season there, but like going in, if they hadn't had that turnaround at the end of the season, like I was ready to start, you know, circling the next draft prospects at quarterback position. So I'm also not going to sit here and pretend like I was 100% bought in when they had that finish to the season. I certainly was more impressed with the way he played. He did a couple things that I was really looking for that I hadn't seen before, like play from behind, because I think a lot of people say, well, Jared Goff is a good quarterback when there's no pressure on him and things like that. Well, when you're playing from behind, everyone in the stadium knows you're going to pass the ball. And so, you know, they're going to bring the heat. And so I needed to make sure that he could be a quarterback that could regularly come from behind. And he did that a couple times in 2022. And then when that started to carry over into 2023, and like you could really see a command of the offense and understanding of an offense, you talk to coaches they say, like, listen, you might not see the development in the way he's throwing the ball. You might not see the development in the stats or whatever, but the way this guy knows the offense back to front, the way this guy can check at the line, all the work that he does before the snap, that's where he's improved the most. And then you started to see that, right? You started to see some more confidence in the throws that he's making, because I think a lot of the early criticism he got too was like, oh, he's too afraid to throw the deep ball, doesn't trust anybody, he's just dinking and dunking his way down the field. And while he's still very much a more of a short yardage passer than a deep ball passer, like, you started to see him be a little bit more aggressive in the middle of the field throws, in the intermediate throws, some of the deep shots to J-Mo started to connect and things like that. And so to me, it was always, it's just like, it was working on the mentals with him. And that's something that I think took a lot of rewiring from his Rams days, because Sean McVay very much used him as just a vessel for himself. Like, Sean McVay was just out there being quarterback. Jared Goff was just going through his motions. The Lions gave him so much more ownership of the offense and what to do. And while Ben Johnson obviously deserves a ton of credit, he's not the guy that's in his ear for every second of the that he can be. He's allowing Jared Goff to do what he wants. And that took time. Like, a lot of people say the only reason Jared Goff turned it around was because the supporting staff around him got better. There's some truth to that, for sure. You need a good supporting staff. But I think that undersells the mental aspect of the game, the mental progress that he's made over the past 3 years of just being a better pre-snap quarterback. And that can do wonders for your game. Like, the best of the best in the NFL aren't necessarily defined by their elite arm strength or their escapability. Your Peyton Mannings, your Tom Brady's, they were mental experts of the game. And so that's where I think he's shown the most growth. Now, he still has a long way to really draw the comparison to those two guys, but I'm saying, like, he has the capability, or he has the trajectory of someone who is growing in the what I believe to be the most important aspect of quarterbacking.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, go back to a couple of things you said here. One was not throwing that deep ball. And, you know, I mean, if you think back to that 2021 season, one guy got cut like a week or two before the season started, and the other wide receiver got hurt in the first game. And, like, your top two receivers are gone, you know? And so you've seen the talent get better around him, but you still do need someone to throw the ball to that talent. And you probably trust it more as, you know, you're willing to take those chances the more you know those guys. So you kind of hit on that narrative about everything has to be perfect for Jared Goff to succeed. And, you know, in a better supporting cast. Well, any quarterback is going to be better with a better supporting cast. There are a few quarterbacks that can overcome some. And there's only one Patrick Mahomes in the NFL. And that's one thing I think I hope people realize. Jared Goff is never going to be a scrambler like Lamar Jackson, or not even a scrambler, a runner like Lamar Jackson, right? There are certain traits he's not going to have. But he does have a lot of very good traits that do get overlooked. And, you know, you talked about playing from behind, right? That Bears game last year in Detroit is a perfect example of when there is zero room for error, can you deliver? And he did it. And that there was no room for error in that game. Now, I understand the frustrations that you felt, because I felt them too, when they played that Patriots game the year before and stuff. But you have seen him grow. Yep. And so I would say he doesn't need everything to be perfect. I think he has started to show that. And I think we saw at the end of the 2022 season, you talked about that and made that run, then things could be very different. But we saw him really pay attention to detail. And Coach Campbell talked about this, that he's not mentally fragile. When you tell him stuff, he works on things, it gets better. We saw that by that non-interception streak after he had so many turnovers. Right. And those turnovers were very Matthew Stafford-like, and they were costing the Lions games because their defense was keeping them in it despite that.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, I think the mental toughness thing is something that just, it can't be overlooked. It can't be understated. You know, not only going through the humiliation of the trade, but then getting to Detroit and going 3-13-1, and then going 1-6 the following year, and having people like me screaming like, why is Jared Goff still here? Right. Like, it's a lot to go through as the head of the team, as the quarterback. It can't be easy to have to hear all of that sort of stuff. And as much as Jared Goff wants to say, like, he doesn't pay attention to the media, like, he also says with the same breath, like, he uses that as a chip on his shoulder. And that, as someone like who gets, you know, 0.001% of the hate mail that he gets. That's not easy. It's not easy to shake that stuff off and use it as motivation. Like, sometimes it hurts to hear someone say something bad about you. And you know, I think only a very special select few are able to turn that into motivation and then actually use that to get better. And not saying the haters are necessarily fueling him, but he's able to at least deflect that or block it out or whatever. And man, it's just rare. It's just rare to go through everything that he's gone through and come out on the other end as, you know, a Pro Bowl quarterback now in Detroit. It's truly incredible. And I don't think I have given enough credit for his mental journey. I think a lot of national media haven't given him enough of a pat on the back there. I think obviously beating the Rams in the playoffs helped a little bit. Defeat a lot of those demons and draw a lot of attention to him because he played a fantastic game in that game. But even now, I still think he deserves a little bit more flowers just for the mental journey he's been on.
All right. Well, last couple of things to wrap up the Stafford-Goff conversation. One, do fans have to choose Stafford or Goff? Or can you fully appreciate what Stafford did while he was here, but now fully support Jared Goff in the present and future?
I mean, I'm personally of the belief that everyone good should be celebrated. And I don't really love like the ranking culture that we have where we have to decide who the GOAT is, the one GOAT is, and who's better than who. And so personally speaking, yeah, like I think you can absolutely enjoy what Matthew Stafford has to bring while also now enjoying what Jared Goff has to bring. It's two very different style of quarterbacks. It's two very different people. And to me, they both brought joy to my Lions fandom. And that's essentially all that matters. If someone, you know, made being a Lions fan just a little bit more easier for a franchise that has had a lot of tough times, let's just celebrate that and not care who was better or why Jared Goff, because he won these playoff games, that makes him better. Or Stafford has a better passer rating. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter. I think we should just learn to celebrate and enjoy good things a little bit more rather than just jump to ranking them and saying this guy's better than this.
Yeah, you know, as someone, again, who watched in the late 80s, the 90s, the early aughts, like, having these two guys at quarterback back to back is kind of a nice thing because, again, we had to have Jared Goff and the whole team build and get better. But man, I look around the NFL and, you know, like Brad Holmes said, it's a lot easier to get worse at quarterback than it is to get better when you have a guy like Jared Goff. So I fully support Goff. Let's talk about the Rams Lions playoff game because it was a wild card game. I've been to an NCAA championship with my alma mater in basketball. I've been to the Orange Bowl. I've been to a game four of the Stanley Cup. But maybe other than that national championship, this wild card game may have been the greatest or second greatest sporting event I have ever been to because of the history. I remember exactly where I was in the living room with my parents when we beat the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs, you know, in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And to be at this game with everything coming back, you were there, I believe, correct?
Yep. Yep.
So what was that moment like for you and what was that experience? And what are some takeaways you had from it?
Man, you sensed that was going to be a special day from the minute I stepped into the stadium. You know, I'm with the press, so I'm trying to get there, you know, two and a half hours early. And I mean, people are going nuts at 2 hours. Like as soon as they open the gates, you know, usually when they open the gates, people are going around the concourse, you know, drinks are on special. So they're getting cheap drinks. No one's really in their seats. It felt like it was at least half full, like almost immediately. And everyone's already loud and Jared Goff chants are happening and Matthew Stafford's getting booed when he comes out there. And it's just, I wish I remembered who it was who said this, but I think it really rings true that to me, Ford Field has never necessarily had a character to it. There hasn't been, you know, there aren't like sections of it where like, you know, they had Barry's balcony and the Silver Dome. And, you know, there wasn't a ton of traditions at Ford Field. I felt like that was the night that Detroit, that Ford Field actually got some character, that got like an identity. because now Jared Goff chants are going to happen all the time. Now opposing quarterbacks are going to get booed all the time, and like there's this sense of excitement, and like it's almost like the bar for the crowd has been raised after. I'm right there with you. Like I'm literally getting chills just thinking about that night because it was incredible. Like it was so, you could tell it meant so much to people. I love watching the broadcast, and you know, NBC did a great job, like focusing on a couple people who have been season ticket holders and were in tears at the end of the game. And so it was just, it was a truly special moment. And if the season had ended, you know, even if they win that game and they get blown up by Tampa, like we still have one of the most special moments, I think, in Lions franchise history, certainly in modern history, with that win, because it's the first playoff game at Ford Field. It's the first playoff win in 30 years. It's against Matthew Stafford. It's with this amazing crowd. It's prime time. It's just such an amazing moment that it's almost hard to explain to fans of franchises that win regularly, like just how much that meant to us, because a lot of times those type of stories that you see are set at the World Series or the Stanley Cup Finals or the Super Bowl. This was just a wild card game, like you said, but it had the feeling of some of those championship games in a way that, again, it's just really hard to explain to an outsider.
Yeah, I mean, it was 0 degrees in Detroit that evening too. Right. I mean, it was so cold, but you got in there, and you're right. I mean, it was just an electric vibe. And I'll be honest, going, like, you know, you go back a month and a half before that, you could see that there was a chance we were going to intersect with them. Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to play the Rams.
I mean, didn't either.
It would be epic if we beat them, but I still remember Joey Harrington and the Miami Dolphins winning right. on Thanksgiving against us. And I'm just like, if we played somebody else the first game and then played the Rams the second game, I would have been okay with that. I just didn't want the Rams and Matthew Stafford to be the team to keep us from getting that playoff victory. But because it happened, it changed everything. And that, I think, was really the changing. That showed that things are different. We got the playoff win, you know? And you know what? People made a little too much out of the booing of Stafford, because you know what? He's public enemy number one going into that game, because that's what's between you and a playoff victory, and the first one since the early 90s. And so that's just the way it goes. And I'm sure a number of people there still like him. It's just not at that moment. Calvin Johnson even said, something like not today or something. I'm obviously not quoting perfectly there, but he's like obviously rooting for the Lions there. But you know, you have to expect that. I said a few episodes back when the schedule came out that the NFL must just want the Lions to dislike Stafford, because I'm all for the opening welcome back video. We appreciate what you did while you were here. Maybe like in week five on a 1 p.m. game. Right. But you're going to open the season on Sunday Night Football. You think we're giving him that video? And if we do, as some of my other guys have said, you're going to hear Jared Goff chants over that whole video probably.
Yeah. Someone had asked me what I think is going to happen, and I don't have any inside sources on what is going to happen. But I think if I were the Lions, like, to me, the best course of action is not to do a video before the game, because again, this is opening week. Lions fans are going to be going crazy. It's another primetime game. You're probably going to have an environment very similar to the other one. It's like, once you get to the third quarter and everything's calmed down, like, sneak one in a commercial break and like have everyone stand up, give an applause, he'll wave in the camera, and that's it. Like, do it that way. That way it's during a commercial break when the play starts back up, we're all excited and rowdy again. But it's, you know, a relatively low downtime where it's not, you know, Lions fans at their most hyped up necessarily. The downside to that is obviously, like, if the Lions are blowing them out or if the Rams are blowing the Lions out, like, it could backfire spectacularly.
That is true. So that, again, if it could have been week five at a 1 p.m. game, that'd be perfect or whatever. But yeah, so I don't know what they'll do either. The chance, though, I couldn't believe it when they started breaking out, and I was like part of it, of course. And have you heard something like that before? I mean, that also kind of adds to that character building that you're talking about at Ford Field.
Yeah. I mean, I think the closest thing ever in Detroit sports. It's just like, let's go Red Wings is such a iconic chant that, like, you know, during a crappy Pistons game or, you know, a mid-July Tigers game when they're out of it, like, sometimes you'll hear a let's go Red Wings chant because people are just bored and they want to say, it's almost like a way of expressing negativity, like, this game is so bad, let's go Red Wings. And so that's the closest thing. I don't know if I've ever seen that sort of level of individual support really since Barry Sanders. You know, Barry's chants are obviously pretty iconic too, but, you know, we didn't have social media back then, so people weren't recording people doing it in the supermarkets or in the streets or at, you know, Grand Valley State basketball games or whatever they were happening at. So yeah, I mean, this was pretty darn unique, but again, I think it speaks to the passion of Lions fans that has laid dormant for so long that the minute that the Lions are in Super Bowl contention, like, everyone is just going crazy. And yeah, it's funny that it all kind of sparks from a night really inspired by Matthew Stafford.
Well, and I was even surprised because I went out to the San Francisco game and I couldn't believe it was breaking out in concourses out there at Levi Stadium. And I'm like, yeah, we are the road team and you have so many people traveling this far away to the other coast and it's still traveling. So that was pretty special as well.
Yeah. And that's something I hope continues this year, because that was also another really cool, really special thing from last year, was all like the road takeovers, the blue waves and basically every road game, in a way that felt very much in the moment, like Lions fans knew that 2023 could be a special season, so let's go see them wherever they go. But at the same time, like, Lions fans travel relatively well every year, and so I'm hoping that is not just a flash in the pan moment, but like a movement. Like, now Lions fans are looking to take over your city every time we're there.
I would love it. I was in the Baltimore one as well. That game didn't go so well, but it was a great experience with all the Baltimore, all the Lions fans coming to Baltimore and celebrating it. And then again, like you said, you saw it on the Tampa one. I think I saw on TV.
Tampa was great.
Might've been one of the biggest ones. And that was a pretty incredible game in itself.
Yeah.
And folks, that's where we come to bring this episode to an end. We will have part two of my conversation about the Detroit Lions with Jeremy Reisman. That will be coming out in the next day or so. So please keep an eye out for that. And again, you can find all of Jeremy Reisman's work at prideofdetroit.com. I highly recommend you check that out. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. And while you're at it, tell your friends about the show and please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.